somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution, prison doors swung open, mothers hugged their sons. The Liberty Bell was ringing when the cops put down.
This is the Quality News Network. Following an order by President Bush, part of the 30-page National Intelligence Estimate Report was declassified today. It says in part that jihadists view the war in Iraq as a cause célèbre and has given extremist behavior a purpose. But it gave no final conclusion about how the war will affect global terrorism. In Afghanistan today, 18 people were killed when a suicide bomber struck outside of a provincial governor's compound. Among the victims were Muslim pilgrims headed to Mecca. In Baghdad today, Saddam Hussein was once again thrown out of court for disrupting his genocide trial. The judge also removed his 6 co-defendants. On Capitol Hill, debate continues on a bill related to the treatment and trials of terrorism suspects. Under recent changes, enemy combatant would encompass not only those actually involved in terrorist activity, but anyone who provides support for the activities or fights a U.S. ally. In New York today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice urged other nations to join the U.S. in imposing sanctions on Syria. She told the New York Times that the U.S. will, quote, have to look at tougher measures if Syria continues to be on the path that it's on, unquote. At the UN, Syria's foreign minister said the U.S. war on terror has failed and that U.S. policies have only worsened international tension. He added that, quote, the exclusive use of force in facing up to terrorism is useless unless the root causes of terrorism are addressed, unquote. An official with the Commerce Department blocked the release of a report that implied global warming is contributing to the frequency and intensity of hurricanes. The journal Nature reports that the official sent an email demanding that the report not be released in May as scheduled. In Tokyo today, 52-year-old Shinzo Abe became Japan's youngest post-war prime minister. Abe has vowed economic reform, a strong alliance with the U.S., and better relations with China. In Chile, where abortions are still illegal and divorce has just recently been legalized, girls as young as 14 are now taking the morning after pill. Chilean president became the country's first female president in March. She's vowed to promote equality between the sexes. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a bill that ends state investments in companies that do business in Sudan. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
FDA officials are closing in on the source of tainted spinach. They say they've traced the E. coli bacteria to a specific batch of spinach that was processed back on August 15th at Natural Selection Foods in San Juan Bautista, California. The Kaiser Family Foundation reports that health insurance premium costs are rising at twice the rate of inflation. In Japan, officials have confirmed the 29th case of mad cow disease. The cow died at a ranch and was brought to a lab where the disease was confirmed. Former Enron CFO Andrew Fastow was sentenced today to 6 years in prison. He pleaded guilty back in 2004. Former WorldCom chief Bernard Ebbers begins his 25-year federal prison sentence today. He was found guilty for his role in the company's accounting fraud. The board of directors for Sharper Image has removed its chairman and CEO and appointed an interim. That follows years of sluggish sales. Chrysler CEO Tom Lasorda says the company plans to increase its sales worldwide by 9% by the year 2007. The conference board says consumer confidence rose higher than analysts had expected last month. Falling gas prices are credited for that rise. Light sweet crude settling at $61.01 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ending its second best close ever, 53 points away from its all-time record high close. Up 93.5 points at 11,669. More at QNN.com.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
It's 6.5 minutes after the hour. It is Tuesday. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, there's a wonderful old W.C. Fields film out there. It's called The Bank Dick. If you have an appreciation of great comedy, you'll be in stitches from start to finish. And there's a line in The Bank Dick where Fields, under the guise of the character he plays, Mr. Egbert Sucey, accent grave over the E, explains to someone, back in the old Senate days, I directed all the great ones. Buster Keaton, and on and on. And at the end of this monologue, this very impressive monologue of his directorial credentials. He says, nights are used to 10 bar. Well, I was thinking about that because a lot of us have been there. Nights are used to 10 bar. And in the bar where I worked, there was a jar that frequently had a label on the front of it that said, Tipping, T-I-P-P-I-N-G, Tipping is not a city in China. Which reminds me of another great line about how denial is not just a river in Egypt. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Denial is a place where George Bush lives, where the Republican Party lives, where kinda sleazy rice goes great with kinda sleazy chicken lives. Because now that the cat is out of the bag, now that Bill Clinton has told the world what we have has said, what people like me, other liberal progressive talkers have said, whether it's Randy Rhodes, Mike Malloy, our own Bruce Birch, Guy James, Dr. Bill O'Brien, Mark Levine, Tom Hartman, I'm sure has said it somewhere along the way, Peter Werby, Peter B. Collins. You know, we said that the Bush administration has been a manifest screw-up in terms of the security of this nation. But they have been in denial, and denial is not just a river in Egypt. Now, Candace Lizzie Rice came out and said,
we were not left a comprehensive strategy to fight Al-Qaeda. Big pieces were missing.
Okay.
Like an approach to Pakistan that might work, because without Pakistan, you weren't going to get Afghanistan.
Okay, keep telling yourself that, kinda. Keep telling yourself that. But, as it turns out, you know, denial is closely associated with lying, because when you're in denial, you'll lie to yourself and you'll lie to others to maintain the level of that denial. And it turns out that 5 days after Dear Leader was sworn into office, God knows I remember that day in January 2001. I'd say it was more like he was sworn at into office. 5 days after that, there was a memo. The memo was called Strategy for Eliminating the Threat from the Jihadist Networks of Al-Qaeda, Status and Prospects. It was authored by Richard A. Clark. You remember Richard Clark, the guy who coined the phrase hair on fire, who started trying to get meetings inside the Bush administration in January and was ignored all the way until September the 12th? Yeah, that Richard Clark. And let's see, 2 pages out of the 13, you can read this at Raw Story, 2 pages out of the 13 in the memo specifically address strategies for securing Pakistan's cooperation in airstrikes against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. Because the Taliban were already a problem. But you see, in the malice and blunderland that obtains at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you can just say it never happened, and suddenly it didn't, until someone like Bill Clinton comes along and rat slaps a hateful little right-winger like Chris Wallace and puts the lie to all the denial. You know, it's kind of like if, your good friend is an alcoholic and somebody walks into a bar and there he sits at the stool. You know, cat's out of the bag. Well, that's what we're dealing with the Bush administration. The cat is finally out of the bag. Well and truly and really. But, of course, you know, she can still say, no, we had no strategy for doing that. They left the cupboard bare, and they took all the W's off the keyboards in the computers, too. Did we tell you that? Yeah, we told you that. And they trashed Air Force One. Yeah, we made that up, too. We were clueless. Yes, they were. And, you know, denial runs through the Republican Party right now. We find out from people like political scientist Larry Sabato, that, yeah, George Allen used that word that begins with N. Used it frequently. On a deer hunting trip, it turns out, by one account, that after they'd killed the deer, they cut its head off, and he asked where the nearest black family's house was so he could put it in their mailbox. This guy's a member of the United States Senate. This is Senator Makaka. Senator Sicko, the guy who told his sister one time that he couldn't imagine a better thing to do in life than to be a dentist so he could actually get paid to cause other people horrendous pain. Yeah, this guy. So denial is positively running through the Republican Party like a plague right now. And, you know, they're denying, you know, we did not make it better for the terrorists. We didn't make it more unsafe. We made it safer. You know, I'm sorry. We don't make the red paint. We make the red paint redder. No, it's not like that. And the shine is off. The glow is gone. And the question is now, How do we drive the point home? Let's see. Jim Webb over George Allen. Bob Casey. And I know he's not liberal enough to suit me either. Bob Casey over Rick Santorum. Sherrod Brown over Mike DeWine in Ohio. Getting kind of close to that break-even point and maybe even cross over into the land of a majority in the Senate. And a majority in the House. And then the hard work begins, doesn't it? The hard work does indeed begin. So that's where, you know, that's where we are as we begin this evening. You, of course, know how to reach the program. It's 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. Jump right in. The conversation's fine. I am a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up a notch. Speak, grunt, no stream. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down. High wire in a fire. Represented seven games in a government for hire at a combat site. Net to us are coming in a hurry with the fury speeding down your neck. Keep my team reporters.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music.
Man down!
Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
And we are back. I'm Bob. And straight to the phones, we're joined by our good friend David calling from the great state of Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks.
Yes, good evening, Bob. I was looking at the headlines for CNN, and the first thing that caught my eye was 71 people arrested in Washington, D.C., two Presbyterian ministers. Something's not wrong with that. Something's not right with that picture.
No, well, yeah, because the greatest threat to America today is liberal Presbyterians.
Well, not just that, but arresting 71 people, that's kind of overkill, in my opinion, in one day.
Well, you know, it depends.
I mean, what could 71 people have done that would have got them arrested?
Unlawful assembly.
Unlawful assembly.
I mean, I'm guessing. I haven't seen the story yet, but that would be, you know.
It says the staff workers were giving them thumbs up outside the windows.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at it here. Hopefully I'll have it here in a second.
And, you know, there's something wrong with that, though. The staff workers aren't rebelling. They're waiting for others to rebel, and it's like
they care
more about their jobs.
You're right, because actually protesting what's being done to America is below their pay grade.
It's like a bad Monty Python sketch.
Yeah.
You protest. Good.
Go. You go, man. Go.
Yeah.
Protest. Kumbaya, right there with you.
I was watching a special on that made me think of, I call this, I have a new name for this administration for, probably the rest of the season. I call it the Fractal Jackass Administration.
Okay, you want to flesh that out a little bit?
Okay, well, the Jackass is for the show Jackass, and Steve-O, and Johnny Knoxville, and basically the whole premise of the show is pull a stunt, get an emotional or physical or any kind of reaction you can get. And that's basically what this administration does. They pull any kind of stunt and they say, wow, I hope we can get a reaction from this. You think people will buy it? Oh, I hope so. We need some higher ratings this time. We need some higher poll ratings. And Fractal, because I was watching something on Arthur C. Clarke today, a program called The Color of Infinity, Fractal, and I realized the conservative philosophy, what they do is similar to what Fractals do, except that they put out emotional their emotional patterns and their behavior patterns are identical to each other, and they think it's beautiful. But the only difference is they think it's beautiful, and it's not. It's quite ugly to be completely identical from each other and to completely force their natural world views on the rest of the world to continue to go down that path, because what happens in fractals in nature is it's natural. It's not forced. It's natural. It happens because that's destiny.
Right.
That's fate. What's happening now
it's process.
Because, yes. What's happening now is it's forced. It's forced homogenization, basically. And to me, the thing that's happening right now is it continues to go down this path, and everyone continues to think. When I was listening to Michael Medved today debate Tom Hartman,
yeah, that's bad for your brain listening to the right wingers, dude.
Yeah, but anyways, he was on the Tom Hartman program. And he was talking about how the war doesn't need to be proportionate, and it was just astounding hearing him say things, but he really had no evidence to back it up. And really, there comes a point where
never been any evidence, David. There's never been any evidence to back up this right wing garbage.
In I guess their evidence is op-ed pieces. and commentary.
Well, right.
People you don't know.
This is argument by faith.
With no credibility.
Right. And it's, you know, it's the way Fox News operates. Well, you know, some people have said. Or what Chris Wallace did and said. Well, you know, I got this email from a viewer. You know, well, you know, you don't stand up and you don't take responsibility for your, you know, this is the public, you know, after all, this is the personal responsibility crowd, and it is for everybody but them. When it comes to them, they'll say, you know, well, you know, some people say, or I got this email. Anything to put distance between them and their hateful agenda. But they, you know, they adhere to it. They believe in it. They want it. And it, you know, overall, David, it's been made up by them from the very get-go. You know, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He can hit London in 45 minutes. You know, got the T-shirt, man.
Well, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about the neutered male in this country and how they have to feel they have to vent at every second they get the chance to be on the airwaves or in print. And it seems to me that it just goes directly to people not sure of what their place is, and they have to find basically their purpose in life. And right wingers are so adamant about finding their purpose that they usually find it in the most negative way when it comes to politics.
Well, that's because their politics are patently destructive, David. It's got to be negative, that because it's negative in its conceptualization, and it's negative in its actualization, and it's negative in its practice. This is a gang that is pure negativity. I mean, they're like antimatter, okay?
Right. And conservatives, they want to continue. Well, the new conservatives, they want to continue on this path of political jihad, basically.
Well, yeah, you know, kill anything that gets in the way and hang on to power at all costs. It is only, I mean, you're just witnessing the ultimate. It's, we got 40 some odd days left, I think.
Right.
It's going to get, let's see, 4, 11, yeah, 43 days or so left. It's going to get even eviler. Eviler? Is that a word? It's going to get nastier. It's going to get more vile.
The perpetual war thing, if they continue that, then it'll never get unnasty.
And, well, you know, I think the barometer of that is the willingness to which our side is beginning to, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I've been doing this kind of stuff for quite some time now. I think it's kind of cool that the rest of the progressive community is catching up to me, David. I mean, I'm not trying to toot my trumpet too loudly, but while he said it eloquently and brilliantly and beautifully last night, there was nothing Keith Olbermann said that has not been said by me and other liberal talkers, you know, for the last several years.
Oh, I agree with you, and you know that goes back to something of like, okay, of what people were talking about. Okay. You know, you know, when it comes down to it, Bob, it's a, okay? the name. The names are not important, and that's something that I realize. The independents, when they see a Democrat name or something,
mm-hmm,
they immediately get skeptical. I've been checking out the message boards, and I'm like, I've talked about this before, but all people are doing is playing a role. And these names aren't important; it's their character, and it goes back to their character and their personality, and it's a lot of different factors. And as much as people like to say, well, I'd like a lot of independents in office, you know what happened? You know what happened if we got all the independents in office? If we got every single independent in office, all the lobbyists would look at them in Washington and K Street and say, oh, I can't deal with these people. I'm going to the Republican.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're going to leave. We're going to quit being lobbyists because everybody's independent now. Oh, they're all green. None of them will ever take any PAC money from us. Oh, gosh almighty, I guess we better quit and pack up and go home. No, it ain't going to happen. If everybody in the Congress is independent, and nobody is.
That's what I'm saying.
Because for as long, you know, maybe it proves a little bit of lack of foresight on the part of the framers that they thought they could have a factionless government and that everybody would be. But they knew framing the Constitution that it wasn't going to work that way. You had the pro-centralized power versus the decentralized power crowd. They were factionalized before they had the Constitution fully realized. So, you know, the minute that somebody stands up and takes a yay position, someone else will be there who takes a nay position, and they will naturally gravitate toward one another. There always will be some sort of party structure.
It's always going to have, and you're always going to have that level of corruption. I hate it when
I don't think it's necessarily corruption, David. It's the system that is around it that is corrupt.
And that, too. But what I'm saying is what a lot of independents don't realize is that continues to keep this higher than righteous attitude over the Democratic Party at large. And I'm like, when you have a structure that big, that's the reality of what you're dealing with. And I don't think they even see that because they've never been in the ball game yet.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And the thing that concerns me is, and it's one of the things that's always concerned me about Greens and independents and things, there are people out there who would rather stand outside and complain than get in, you know, than get in the trenches and get dirty and roll their sleeves up and get busy and do the hard work. And I have an abiding suspicion of independents and Greens along those lines. It's because you're afraid to stand up and be counted as something. Or if you're a Green, it's because you know, you're not capable of leading, but you are capable of fetching.
Well, I always think that independent is more community and a small city based, and Democrat is major mostly to me for like capitalism and major cities. That's the way I look at the governing structure. That's the way how I see things.
Yeah, but by the same token, a national Democrat is a far cry from the guy who's county dog catcher and is a Democrat.
Right.
They both have the same name. They may be radically different people. The few Democrats that exist in the Deep South, I'm a Democrat, they're Democrats. We would probably be hard pressed to find a lot of common ground, because they have to be, in order to stay in office, they have to be conservative. And frankly, conservatism's killing this country. And you know, it's a question of whether you want to be in office or whether you want to be correct.
Again, it comes down to playing a role. And
yeah,
I wish independents would understand that just because somebody's a Democrat, guys, it doesn't mean that they're your enemy, and it doesn't mean that they're going to do you wrong. That's just when you're rolling the dice. You're rolling the dice with anyone. I mean, I don't understand why they can't get that yet.
Well, but you see that by the same token, a lot of Democrats, I would hazard to guess probably a majority, or a lot of independents, rather, probably a majority of them, are a little more than pissed off Republicans. Okay?
I would agree with that, too.
Because what happens is, in a lot of states, if you're an independent, the Republican parties have set it up such that if you're an independent, you can vote in a Republican primary, which to me is just dumber than a bag of rocks. You know, if you're independent, by God, you're independent, and you don't have a primary because you're not nominating anybody.
It's a difficult situation, and You just have to put out your views and hope for the best.
Well, and you try to win in the marketplace of ideas, David. You try to win in the marketplace of ideas, and more than anything else, you know, we can save the Democratic Party. It's going to take some work, and the question is whether or not we are willing to work as hard as is necessary to do so. The Republican Party is dead. The Republican Party is over. The Republican Party is morally, ethically, philosophically bankrupt. Okay, they can't be saved. They're going to be the party of AT&T. They're going to be the party of Verizon. They're going to be the party of Halliburton, the party of International Coal Group, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to be that creature, and they can't be saved.
How many do you think will turn into Democrats this year if it continues to go down the wrong path?
I think
Or will they just run to independent?
Well, they'll call themselves an independent. They'll be a pissed off Republican.
That is so, you know what? That is so emotionally immature, though.
Well, it's intellectually dishonest while you're at it.
Yeah, then that too. I mean, it's my whole thing about pointing this out is it's just a name and it's just role playing.
Well, Shakespeare would agree with you.
Right, and you just need to judge it on the person, and just hopefully you have a good judge of character, and that's all it is.
But, you know, that's okay, this is my little elitist moment, David.
Okay.
A lot of people can't make that kind of a character judgment based on 45-second, 60-second political commercials where, you know, I'm Bill Doberman and I believe in families. You know, what the hell does that mean?
Did anyone check out what Mr. Bill Clinton said when he said, "I like Karl Rove." That's a soundbite right there for the Republicans.
Yeah.
I can't believe he said that on national TV. I like Karl Rove.
I like Karl Rove.
And see, that says more to me about Bill Clinton thinking that this is just a freaking game.
Well, there's an aspect of, it's not just a game, David. There's an aspect of gamesmanship. And Bill Clinton plays it as well or better than anybody. That's why they still hate him so much, because every time they tried to play it with Bill, Bill beat their butts with a big with a big stick. That's why they're still bent out of shape about it. You know, I stay bent out of shape about George Bush because George Bush is raping this country.
Do you think he thinks that Hillary can win for 2008?
I wouldn't even begin to try to get inside his head, David. There's no way of even making an educated guess.
To me, that's a nightmare scenario.
Well, you know, Jerry Falwell, for all of his sleazy nastiness, did speak some truth. And he was just saying something that I've been saying for quite some time again as well. And that is that there is an entire industry devoted to hating Hillary Clinton that started in the building prior to 1992 even. And it's in place. And they can't use it unless she runs for president. You know, the weird little knuckle dragon mouth breathing freakazoids that go to the second holiness Southern Baptist cult snake handling blah blah blah. Those people are not going to come out to vote against the likes of anyone except Hillary. But they'll come out against Hillary because this industry has been created. This industry exists to convince Americans that she's, well, Falwell said it, the devil. It just is what it is. Hey, David, I got to roll on, but thanks so much.
No problem, Bob. Have a good evening.
You too.
Later.
Onward and upward. We are joined by our good friend Rick Goodner calling in from Texas. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Oh, I'm doing great. After last night, talk about freedom. That was great to hear Clinton say what he said.
Yeah, and then to have it followed up by Olbermann that way.
Olbermann, my God, that man is so brilliant. It's really something. I really enjoyed it. Absolutely magnificent. I have a question for you, though.
Oh no.
Can we play pretend?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay.
I do that real good.
You're a general.
Okay.
Okay, you got two soldiers.
Uh huh.
And both of them are equally trained, equally deadly, and equally as good. Okay? One's a conservative, a Republican,
mm-hmm.
and the other one's a Democrat. You have to send somebody in. They have to take out a person. There's no choice. They have to take this person out, and they're likely to die. And you're going to tell them this beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Which one are you going to send in?
Let's see. My baser emotions want to send the Republican because there would be one less of them then. boy, that's mean, isn't it?
No. That's probably good for most people.
I've been
asking this all day.
But if I want to get the job done, I'll send the Democrat.
You'll send the Democrat. And the difference is very simple. Republicans cannot win a war because they don't know how to sacrifice.
Right. See, you tell me the two candidates are equally trained, equally deadly, blah 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 blah. But in my heart of hearts, I know that when it comes down to rubber hitting the road, that the Republicans likely to turn and run.
They're not going to sacrifice. It's just not going to happen. The Republicans don't win wars. I mean, the Vietnam War, McNamara, he was a Republican. Secretary of Defense was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans cannot win wars because they don't know how to sacrifice. They're not going to give up what they personally have. When they can hide their kids in the National Guard, they'll do that. World War II, no one got to hide. When my uncle's plane went down, I guarantee you, there was one of the richest people in New York on that plane with him and one of the poorest. It's just the way it is.
Right.
We will sacrifice. They will not. We're scared to death of war. That's why we are so much against them. Because we know that when we go into a war, we're going to put everything into it. We're going to sacrifice. We're going to get the job done. So we do everything we can to stay out of them, and we get paid as cowards.
God, you're right. Well, how do we? That's some of that. Some of that's a language issue. Some of that is just a failure of being on message. Can you imagine, you know, what you said about, you know, the Second World War? Can you imagine after Pearl Harbor, FDR coming out and getting behind the microphones, and instead of talking about a day that will live in infamy, he did the same thing that George Bush did? Can you imagine FDR coming out and saying, well, we got the snot bombed out of us by the Japanese in a sneak attack at Pearl Harbor. What I want you to do is go shopping.
And we'll attack Mexico.
Yeah, and I know. It's makes your head hurt, doesn't it?
It's sad. Now, think about this. Talking about the reason why we don't want war is because we know we're going to sacrifice. We're scared to death of them. And so we do everything we can to fight against that, ever going into a war. Republicans are scared to death of sex. That's their big campaign thing. That's what they always go for. We don't care one way or the other what a person does. Most Democrats, most liberals are very comfortable with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans aren't. They have this gigantic hang-up, and that's why it comes up in the election all the time. And that's the major difference between the two. And yet we get pegged as cowards.
But they can't win this war or any other, Rick. I mean, I think that's the central piece of information that you're conveying. They will not win the so-called war on terror, whether it's a comma or a semicolon, what's going on in Iraq. And my stomach still turns every time I hear that soundbite from George Bush calling, you know, 2,700 dead Americans a comma.
A comma. Isn't that wonderful? And that's exactly what he thinks. But if that was his kid, it would be different. But it would never happen. The war would have never happened if he couldn't protect his daughters from going. It wouldn't happen.
Well, what would we have thought of a president, Rick, assuming, again, this is one of those all things being equal sort of situations,
mm-hmm.
assuming that the war in Iraq had to happen? What would the American people have thought of a president who came out and said, listen, you know, we're doing this, and gas prices are probably going to fluctuate wildly. The best way that you can do your part starting now is to drive as little as possible, consume as little oil as possible, make sure that we can't get ourselves hoodooed in the speculation market, conserve a little bit, sacrifice for a little while, and we'll make, you know.
In other words, sacrifice. That's it.
Yeah.
You can't get a Republican who's going to say that. They're not going to sacrifice. If the sacrifice is the issue, the war is not going to happen under them.
Well, the sacrifices of the Second World War, Rick, were made. There was a social understanding, don't you think? There was an agreement that, you know,
together.
Yeah, my parents used this phrase. My father to this day, such and such and so for the duration, for the duration. Everybody agreed. Well, some of the Republicans didn't. They fought. They fought the war effort for all they were worth in Congress. But the idea was we are going to sacrifice and do what is necessary for as long as it takes, and not a minute longer.
Not a minute longer, and it, what did it last? 4 years.
Yeah.
Sacrifice.
No, we will soon have taken longer not getting Osama bin Laden than it took to more or less smoke out Hitler in the bunker and. Put paid to the war with the Japanese. And that's the reason they couldn't call for any sacrifices, Rick. That's the reason the Bush administration couldn't call on the people to sacrifice, because there was no duration. There was no, because they started out, they screwed it up from the get-go by saying things like, well, this is going to be a generational war.
Well, you can't have a duration if you're planning on staying there forever and taking all the petroleum.
Right.
They can't be. You know, I'm a cut-and-run liberal. I'm a cut-and-run Texan. It's actually a Texas phrase.
I always thought it was nautical, but I want to hear your end of it.
Okay. Cut-and-run happened with, well, it may have originally came from nautical, but it was Jim Bowie that we first heard about here. And he had five guys that was after him. And so he just ran right into the middle of them, cut two of them, and ran.
Okay.
A few days later, three of them's walking down the street. He runs through the middle of them, cuts two, and runs. A week later, he found the other one, cutting, and didn't run. Cut and run is what he tried to talk Travis into at the Alamo. And Travis wouldn't go for it.
Nope, going to stand there and make a big noble sacrifice. And that word, we're really giving that word some mileage tonight, Rick.
Absolutely. If they would have taken that 138 men, 137, forgive me, God, someone's going to shoot me now, and ran through with their light cavalry, cut and ran all the way to San Antonio, Santa Ana would have been destroyed before he got there. It would have worked. That tactic worked. Take a guess what kind of tactic they used in Vietnam.
You mean the Vietnamese?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cut and run.
Cut and run. What are the Iraqis? I'm not going to say they're just not going to say terrorists. What are the Iraqis using against us now?
The same thing. Yeah. Well, what did we use in the American Revolution? Behind fences, behind trees.
Cut and run. It works.
It demoralizes. It demoralizes the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
It kills just enough of them to make everybody else think that they're next.
And then they start hiding.
Yeah, and once you've driven them into hiding, you've won.
You've won. How are you going to defeat terrorists? Cut and run. It's the only way. Light, fast-moving troops. And look, you don't even need that. Here you go. I'm gonna brag here. Us Texans can't stop from doing it anyway. Give me this.
Okay.
Give me, Rick Goodner, $25,000. Sarge and Gunny Bob, and then send us to East Timor, Indonesia, where Osama bin Laden is at. He's not in Pakistan. And we'll give him back to you in 2 weeks.
Well, I think I can believe something like that. I think it could have been done with special forces, had special forces not been pulled out of Afghanistan and inserted into Iraq.
Into Iraq.
As he did. You know, the Constitution uses phrases, Rick, like high crimes and misdemeanors.
High crimes.
How on earth can wasting the lives of American servicemen and women, regular Army, Guard, Reserve, what have you?
You mean commas?
Commas, yeah, wasting commas. How could that not be a high crime or a misdemeanor? We had to have a debate a few years back, as I recall, about whether or not consensual oral sex in the Oval Office was it a high crime or was it a misdemeanor? Because the creeps who started that trouble had already preconceived that it was one or the other. It's either a high crime or a misdemeanor. None of the above was not one of the choices, you see.
Well, the way I've always felt about that was no one died, only a blue dress got stained, and I actually want my president to be sexually satisfied so he's not screwing me.
Yeah,
I'm in one of those moods today.
I understand. There are somewhat coarse bumper stickers out there that reflect what you're talking about there, Rick. You know, will somebody please give George Bush a...
Yes.
But, you know, I don't think... I had this conversation with somebody in the last couple of days. These guys don't get off on sex. They're not normal. They get off on power. They get off on abuse. I mean, this is, you know, this is verging over into your official territory. This is the kind of sick stuff that brings us Jeffrey Dahmer.
And that's the reason why when you Google the two words Republican and pedophile, look what you get.
Yeah, monstrous list, isn't it?
Monstrous. I think I heard that from you.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a fact. If the only way they can get sexually satisfied is to have power and control over the person they're having sex with, they can't do it with a normal, average, equal person. The woman either has to be servitude to them, or the woman has to, I'm sorry, or it has to be a child. And the fact that Hillary Clinton is an intelligent and powerful woman scares them to death. Because they don't know how to relate to a woman.
Thank you. Have a good day.
A grown, sensible woman.
No,
and
they don't.
And that's pathological.
Yes, it is. Hey, can I take you to a different place, Rick?
Anything. I'm through. Now I've got
since
rants out of the way.
Okay, I need you to put your Dr. Rick Goodner talk radio psychologist hat on.
It's there.
You know, it turns out... Now, I was going to talk about this later in the program, but when I read this story, I immediately thought of you because I really wanted to see what you would have to say about it. The Sago mine disaster turns out to be the disaster that just keeps on taking. Since August 29th, two more people who were involved in that disaster have committed suicide, Rick. I read this today, and it was just heartbreaking. But I wonder if people are going to understand what really brings this kind of thing on. One of the people who was most recent, the person who most recently committed suicide, 63-year-old man. He was one of the fire bosses who went in, saw elevated methane readings, thought the methane detector was screwed up again, or carbon monoxide detector, thought it was just busted again, and came out and said it was okay for the crews to go on back in. He killed himself Saturday.
Felt responsibility, felt guilt. He felt like he needed to be there instead of them. They were there. He had to join them. It's a shame that people have to do that. He's the person who should have been taking care of them, and in his mind, he felt like he let everything down. Now, any of the mine owners kill themselves?
No, I noticed that absence in the list, Rick.
I was kind of surprised. I thought they'd go.
No, Wilbur Ross Jr. is still eating Chateaubriand, and the president of International Coal Group, a guy named Hatfield, he's still driving a nice car and going home to the wife and kids at night and having a high old time.
Oh, great. But what is the other one? Who is the other
one? The other one was the emergency dispatch guy.
Another emergency person. What could I have done? Did I do enough? And in his mind, he didn't do enough. So what's left? If he feels personally responsible, then he has to pay the price.
This is horrifying. And of course, there's a statement from International Coal Group saying that, Ira Gam, ICG spokesman, said, International Coal Group was saddened to learn of the deaths of Bill Chisholm and John Boney. Our thoughts and prayers go out to each of their families at the time.
What happens here, whenever we have a traumatic event, I immediately pull everybody who's in it together. We go through a debriefing.
And you probably have those from time to time, don't you?
We have them, even in a small community. We have them quite often. And, you know, picking up heads on the side of the road, happens to be a cousin, that kind of stuff. You know, this stuff happens.
Yeah.
And the first thing I do, I pull them in. And I'll let everybody know, give them a chance to talk, give them a chance to face their guilt. And then we work through it so that they see that they didn't let anybody down, that they've done everything they could do. But did they do a debriefing on any of these people?
Well, you know, it says that the International Coal Group said that at the time of the Sago tragedy, ICG offered personal grief counseling to all Sago employees and their families. In light of these recent deaths, the company has reminded its workers that these counselors remain available and urged them to seek assistance if they feel the... Wait. Here's the good part, Rick. Here's the good part. Urged them to seek assistance if they feel the circumstances warrant.
Oh, my God. They should be out there. They should be searching through these people. They should be talking to them. They should be listening to what they're saying. They should be listening to what they're not.
Yeah, but see, this is a non-union mine, okay? So they're going to wring every last damn penny out of there that they can get.
And if no one is going to any therapy, then obviously they don't have to pay for therapy, right?
Right.
So
again, it's a non-union mine. So if you say, yeah, boss, I'm still feeling pretty rotten about all that, you know, maybe, and they say, okay, you feel as rotten as you want to, you're fired.
Pull up your socks and get back to work or get out.
Yeah, because, you know, again, non-union mind, they don't want these guys coming out of the hole going, I can't do it today, boss. Find me that counselor. I got to sit and have me a talk, because it's like there's ghosts down there, man.
Absolutely. But look at that waste of money and waste of time and, you know, good and well, you people can get over because it didn't really affect you. Well, wait till the family members start killing themselves. Take a guess at this, Bob. Here's an easy one for you. What is the number one cause of death of service members returning back from Iraq?
Suicide?
Suicide.
I didn't want it to be that way, but it's a pretty easy question.
It is. And what's the country doing about it?
Nothing. Nothing. Not a damn thing. You know,
they have cut funds to it.
Well, sure they have. We've zeroed out traumatic brain injury research, Rick. Traumatic brain injury. Yeah, and it's the signature wound of this war, and we've zeroed out funding for researching it.
Here in Texas, they've cut out all public funding for mental health counseling for poor people. But yet, the rich or the well-to-do or even the middle class, Republicans, go to counseling constantly, and they're about the only ones who's getting it anymore.
Well, you know, I remember you mentioning Texas. Molly Ivins, in a column she wrote back, was talking about a recently departed former old political operative from Texas, and they were, and she recalled a discussion on the floor of the Texas legislature regarding bastardy, and a really mean-spirited bill that sought to basically reestablish some old English tenets of bastardy, you know, inheritance, that kind of thing. And the old guy stood up and he said, "You know, I'm not worried about the little bastards out there in Texas, but I am very worried about the self-made ones in here."
I love that.
And there are, and that's, Rick, we're dealing with a lot of self-made ones in this government, and they happen to wear Republican behind their name. We worry. You talk about the number one cause of death among returning Iraq vets is suicide. That's right now. Wait till 10 years from now when the piper turns, really, really turns the bill in.
Go out and check the homeless people. Check at New York, San Francisco, any place. Check. You're going to find that the largest percentage of them or Vietnam vets, because people return with no debriefing, no way to get back into society. They have just spent a year, and Iraq is going to be 2, 3, 4 years, in murder, mud, and blood. And then they're thrown back into society. Pull up your socks, get back to your life. We're going to end up with homeless people. We're going to end up with suicide, we're going to end up criminals, people who feel so betrayed that they're going to turn to crime, and it's going to be vicious, and it's going to be ugly. Nothing good has came out of this, and nothing good will ever.
The nightmare has not even started yet, Rick.
Not even started, and right now the damage is done.
Yeah.
It can only get worse. It cannot get better. It cannot get better.
All we can do is try to manage and minimize the damage.
Well, I think that if they actually start doing some work on the returning soldiers, give them a re-immersion time, you know, of a few weeks at least, to talk to somebody, to be able to pinpoint those who are prone to problems. You know, and it's not going to be the noisy one. It's going to be the quiet one. You know,
You never hear the one that hit you.
Right. You know, he was such a good neighbor. He was always quiet, never caused any trouble.
Yeah.
That's because he was in his fantasies. That's because he was in his pain. That's because he was in his hell. It's Pamela.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, we've got a roll here because we're on top of the news, and we've already made an hour go away.
I am so sorry about that.
No. Don't apologize. My God, I appreciate your insight. I really, really do. Don't turn off the speakers though, because I've got insult to add to injury when we come back from the news.
I do want to hear it. I do want to hear it so badly.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
See you, Bob.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. We've got news coming. You want to get in on this discussion? If you do, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Going to be here for 2 more hours. Man, this is conversation radio. This is your radio. Use it. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Quality News Network. Following an order by President Bush, part of the 30-page National Intelligence Estimate Report was declassified today. It says in part that jihadists view the war in Iraq as a cause celeb and has given extremist behavior a purpose. But it gave no final conclusion about how the war will affect global terrorism. In Afghanistan today, 18 people were killed when a suicide bomber struck outside of a provincial governor's compound. Among the victims were Muslim pilgrims headed to Mecca. In Baghdad today, Saddam Hussein was once again thrown out of court for disrupting his genocide trial. The judge also removed his 6 co-defendants. On Capitol Hill, debate continues on a bill related to the treatment and trials of terrorism suspects. Under recent changes, enemy combatant would encompass not only those actually involved in terrorist activity, but anyone who provides support for the activities or fights a U.S. ally. In New York today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice urged other nations to join the U.S. in imposing sanctions on Syria. She told the New York Times that the U.S. will, quote, have to look at tougher measures if Syria continues to be on the path that it's on, unquote. At the U.N., Syria's foreign minister said the U.S. war on terror has failed and that U.S. policies have only worsened international tension. He added that, quote, the exclusive use of force in facing up to terrorism is useless unless the root causes of terrorism are addressed, unquote. An official with the Commerce Department blocked the release of a report that implied global warming is contributing to the frequency and intensity of hurricanes. The journal Nature reports that the official sent an email demanding that the report not be released in May as scheduled. In Tokyo today, 52-year-old Shinzo Abe became Japan's youngest post-war prime minister. Abe has vowed economic reform, a strong alliance with the U.S., and better relations with China. In Chile, where abortions are still illegal and divorce has just recently been legalized, girls as young as 14 are now taking the morning-after pill. Chilean president became the country's first female president in March. She's vowed to promote equality between the sexes. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a bill that ends state investments in companies that do business in Sudan. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
FDA officials are closing in on the source of tainted spinach. They say they've traced the E. coli bacteria to a specific batch of spinach that was processed back on August 15th at Natural Selection Foods in San Juan Bautista, California. The Kaiser Family Foundation reports that health insurance premium costs are rising at twice the rate of inflation. In Japan, officials have confirmed the 29th case of mad cow disease. The cow died at a ranch and was brought to a lab where the disease was confirmed. Former Enron CFO Andrew Fastow was sentenced today to 6 years in prison. He pleaded guilty back in 2004. Former WorldCom chief Bernard Ebbers begins his 25-year federal prison sentence today. He was found guilty for his role in the company's accounting fraud. The board of directors for Sharper Image has removed its chairman and CEO and appointed an interim. That follows years of sluggish sales. Chrysler CEO Tom Lasorda says the company plans to increase its sales worldwide by 9% by the year 2007. The Conference Board says consumer confidence rose higher than analysts had expected last month. Falling gas prices are credited to that rise. Light sweet crude settling at $61.01 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ending its second best close ever, 53 points away from its all-time record high close. Up 93.5 points at 11,650.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I said it gets worse. It gets worse. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a bummer or anything, but this is, you know, we tend to think of New York as a so-called blue state. But we forget that New York City has a red mayor, Michael Bloomberg, turncoat, ex-Democrat, now a Republican. I want to share something with you before we go back to the phones. If you're on hold, please stay that way. I'll come to you ASAP. This is out of the New York Times. It's a three-day-old story. You know, we do a lot in 3 hours on this program, and I don't always get to all the news that I want to, but some stuff I hang on to. This is one of them. It turns out, have you seen this? It turns out that a great number of people who were called up for military service in the wake of 9/11 in the city of New York, hundreds of uniformed city workers in the reserves, were going to get their city health and pension benefits suspended because they'd been called up. So the city offers an option that looks pretty good. They said they'd keep paying the salaries and continue their benefits, but when they returned, they'd have to repay the city their city salary or their military pay, whichever was less. It's a hell of a note, isn't it? So, you know, you've just been called up. You know, you're in the Army now. You're not behind the plow. You'll never get rich. You're in the Army now. And you've got to make a snap decision. You got to go. We're leaving. We got to go. And so people signed off on the dotted line, cops, firefighters, that kind of, and, you know, headed off to Afghanistan, later on Iraq. 1,600 city employees, mostly police officers, signed up for that benefits program. Well, these people have come back since then, and they're getting dunned, as it were, by the city, telling them to pony up the $200,000. Mostly it's around $200,000, that the city wants back. Now, bear in mind, these people never saw more than two-thirds of this because a lot of it went to taxes and so forth. But they're being hammered to pay back $200,000 to the city of New York. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is this how you run a war? This is go back to what our good friend Rick said earlier. This is, in fact, how a Republican administration runs a war, because, you see, we don't give a tinker's damn what happens to the working people who fight it. As long as there's some good-for-nothing, godless, soulless, motherless Republican who can take credit for it. How would you like to come back from a war? Maybe get a warm, welcoming embrace from your wife and your family, mom, your dad, your kids, God knows, your kids. And then your spouse looks at you, and he or she says, you know, the mail's been piling up since you've been gone, and I think you really want to look at this one. And it's a note demanding that you pay back $200,000 to the city of New York. $200,000 that you wound up going into debt over in order to serve your country. How would that make you feel? What would that do to your soul? What would that do to your patriotism? What would that do? What would that do to the way that you viewed the country for whom you had just put your life on the line? You know, it's a nasty, nasty place in Iraq. There's one Marine unit that has a sign by the door that says, "Be professional. Be polite. Be prepared to kill everyone you meet." It is a vile and nasty place that we've created over there. So you get back from that and you get, "Greetings from Mayor Bloomberg's office. We need $200,000 right now." Is this how America runs a war? Really? Really? Apparently, the three retired military officers who testified before Congress don't think so. No armor, no plans, no exit strategy, and a story of Donald Rumsfeld in a meeting saying that he would personally fire the next person who asked whether they had plans for an exit strategy. Yeah. That's where we are. Let's go to the phones. Sarge joins us from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
That's some interesting thoughts you're throwing out there, Bob.
Thank you, Sarge. I'm just throwing them out there and seeing what sticks to the wall.
Well, you know, that wasn't really what I wanted to comment on, but now that you've mentioned it, let me tell you how the military works and how the Republicans feel about the soldiers and the veterans. I happen to have a little insight on this. George Washington said that the strongest link for recruitment in the military was the veteran. That is where your strength of your military actually comes from.
Mm-hmm.
That is who people look at and say, "Hey, you know, I want to try the military." These guys totally hate the veteran. They have cut our benefits. They have done us so dirty. When a veteran, such as myself, who served in two branches of the military, has a limit of less than $550 a month that he can bring in, does that sound like you want to join a military that leaves you like that?
No, not in the least.
But that's what I face. And the mental health issues are more addressed than the physical issues, and yet they are hardly addressed at all. It's like the ruling that there was no such thing as Gulf War Syndrome. You know, I mean, you know, when I heard that, I just, I picked something up and threw it against the wall. It made me so mad because you cannot do your veterans like this because it only goes to hurt your troops, because your veterans are the key to your military. George Washington said that. Good God Almighty, who else you want to believe besides George Washington?
Well, you know, he's dead and they don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, these people make me sick. They really do. And I look at what's going on, and in this area, for instance, the lack of interest on the mental health aspects of things really is hurting so much. We have a group down in Jackson County that is just hurting for money on mental health problems because of the wide range of mental health issues that are being encountered. And did you know these rats like Lott and Barber and Bush and Cheney and all of those rat bastards, they are cutting funds to them?
Yes.
Well,
you see, when a veteran comes home and is no longer fighting their little oil wars, He's no longer of value to them, Sarge. At that point, he becomes a liability to them. And frankly, you know, if they can set things up so they'll die a little quicker, that's a little bit better for them because they don't want to think about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
there really is, honest to God, a reason that George Bush will not go to a military funeral.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I have actually had people tell me, oh, you draw a VA check, you're taking welfare, you're one of them freeloaders.
Well, those people just need to be slapped, okay? That's all.
I mean, and you wouldn't believe the number of things that could pop up. That's why a lot of your Vietnam-era veterans don't want to even talk about the military because, like, I was working in a store in Ocean Springs, and this kid, he was talking about some kind of military thing, and I said, listen, man, I served in during Vietnam and all, and I'm going to tell you, there's nothing about war that's pretty. And he says, oh, well, you guys were just a bunch of losers.
Yeah, there's another one needs slapped.
And, you know, that kind of leaves you hurt, you know.
Well, sure it does.
Then when you go to the when you go to the VA and they say, well, we don't have room for you, and you ask them, well, where can I stay until I can get in? That's your problem. And so for weeks on end, veterans are sleeping on the streets because there is no place for them. And that's what's going on, and it just makes me so...
See, this is a national shame, Sarge. This is shame. I mean, I'm talking about the red in the face, mortifying, can't hold your head up in public. Shame.
Well, you know, it's not just the veterans either. And you can look at the veterans to see what's going to happen to the civilians. It's like these Katrina victims. The mental health services are being cut for them as well. And, in fact, I've got a link on my right sidebar that you can donate to help get mental health people into Jackson County and Harrison County because the funds are just not there. The government is using them in other areas that are far less important. And, you know, I hope people will go and click on it. You'll see a little Mississippi emblem.
Yeah, I've seen it, sure.
But if you click on that, it'll give you a chance to donate. And it'll help children who are having mental problems. It'll help adults who are having mental problems dealing with this. Because I guess you have to really be here to understand just the amount of trauma that is being inflicted on the people. And it's, you know, I talk about Mississippi because that's my area of focus.
Sure.
But the same as in Louisiana. And, you know, I just wonder what's wrong with Americans. Don't they give a damn about their own people down here? I mean, God almighty. I know these people vote wrong. They're crazy.
No. It's ethnic cleansing.
Well, class warfare.
Yeah, no, it's ethnic cleansing. I mean, this is about, you know, Stalin in the Soviet Union would go and say, you know, look, he would do mass relocations and say, you don't live here anymore. You live somewhere else.
Yeah. Well,
and then he'd bring people in, his people, to live in that particular area. This is that same kind of thing with the impetus of a natural disaster behind it.
Yeah,
okay, Sarge.
That's what's happening. You got it right. That's exactly what's
because,
going on.
Because, you know, the area will be rebuilt and it will be repopulated. Okay, but it will not be populated with people coming back home. It'll be populated with people moving in and buying new McMansions.
Yeah, well,
and voting the right way.
You know, I even up here in Columbia, and I'm 85 miles from Gulfport, but even here, you can see the effects of some of the biological problems that are being created on the coast, and it's really scary. In fact, I seldom have a day that my sinuses don't feel like they're infected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nothing more than mold and mildew and stuff of this nature. Of course, we got hit pretty hard by Katrina. So, you
yeah.
know, I'm in the Katrina hard-hit area. But, I mean, I don't know, Bob. It just worries me. I wonder what is it going to take to wake people up? What do we have to do?
I don't know that you can. I don't know that that any one thing will wake them up. I mean, I'm just going to be brutally honest about it, Sarge.
I don't know.
You know, the last great wake up call that this country got was everything that went from the Great Depression through the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't.
You know, I've heard people down here talk, and they'll say. In fact, I talked to someone today on the phone, and I finally had to hang up on them. They made me so mad. But they'll use the excuse. They'll start out saying, "Well, I vote Republican," and then they'll turn around and eventually say, "Well, both parties are crooked. You know, all politicians are crooked."
But see, that's the excuse that Republicans like to use. You know, there's nothing new in that, Sarge, because that was what you got out of, well, you know, Nixon didn't do anything that any other president didn't do. He just got caught. I heard that a million times
yeah.
as an excuse for that thug, that criminal, that person who should have been tried, convicted, and imprisoned for the rest of his natural born days for what he tried to do to this government, okay? That's a cop-out.
Yeah, and I hate it, and it makes me so mad because I hang up on them when they get started on that. And I even asked this person, their children had their homes destroyed in Katrina, and they're virtually living off of charity right now. And I asked her, well, what in the world are you sitting there telling me you vote Republican when this is the very ones that has your children in such dire straits? And you're going to sit there and tell me that you support these murderers?
And they'll say, yeah, because, you know, he's a Christian man, and he won't let the gays get married.
I don't get these people, Bob. Listen, I'm going to get off, and I've got a column today and with an interview of Steady.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that on Bruce's program.
And I also have a little thing. I got an email from Kathy Malloy.
Oh, yeah.
And she told me if people really want to get Mike on horn, she told me how it can be done. Of course, it says, ooh, it's big-time money. But, hey, if people want to give it a try and see what we can do, see if we can pull it off, hey, I'll organize it.
All right, then. Well, you know, forward that to me.
Okay, I sure will. I don't think I have your email, but you can...
Bob at headonradio.com. Couldn't be easier.
I think I can remember that.
All right, yeah, Bob at headonradio.com.
Okay, I'm going to get off and let some of these other folks...
All right, I bet you somebody will even post the email address in the chat room.
I bet you they will. Elo will. Bob, thank you so much.
All right.
I appreciate everything you do. You guys are really the voice that we need.
Well, we're just... It's as good for us. It helps us as much as it helps anybody else, and that's the honest God truth.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be, isn't it?
I think so. Thank you, Sarge.
Thank you.
You have a good night. And, let me back up for just a minute, because what Sarge said about the mental health issue is, you know, it's true of Iraq veterans coming home. It's true of the people who were... had their lives devastated by Katrina, and we have seen the stark reminder of it in these two, you know, include these deaths with the explosion at Sago. Now, I'm not trying to come back and just beat on this for gratuitous purposes, but there are lessons we have to learn. As you know, I mean, the ironies just wash over me. We were at the Jefferson Jackson Day festivities in Charleston Saturday evening. And the invocation there was given by the pastor of the Sago Baptist Church. And at roughly that same time, John Nelson Bonney was contemplating what when he finally picked up a gun and shot himself. we have this thing, and maybe it's just a human failing or a human inability, where we like to tidy things up in neat little packages that don't go in neat little packages. Sago blew up. Katrina blew through. The bodies were found. We buried the bodies. We said the words that we say over the dead, and we moved on. But lo and behold, 8-9 months later, more death from Sago. And there's more death from Katrina every day. And it can't be bundled up in a neat little package. You can't say, this is the death from Katrina. Because there will be deaths from Katrina 10 years out. And to a certain extent, everybody in that little community died some that day, last New Year's, in Upshur County. And if you tend to let yourself be seduced into believing that it can be tidily dealt with, then all we do is guarantee that it will happen again, and again, and again. And of course, with the funding cuts that we've seen at the VA, with what George Bush does to veterans who come home, we have guaranteed that it will happen again and again and again. Had enough? Are you ready to? I know. Some Clinton wasn't liberal enough, or wasn't liberal at all. You know, whatever. But the fact of the matter is, he rat-slapped Chris Wallace, and he showed the rest of the nation, Democrat, liberal, progressive, moderate, whoever is sick unto their souls with the filth that is Republican governance, he showed us all that it's okay to stand up and fight back. He followed in the footsteps of some pretty bold people who have been doing that very thing, fighting back since the day that George Bush took office and since before that time. So, will we fight back? Will you? Will I? I'll be here every night. I appreciate it when you join me. I hope we energize each other to talk to our neighbors, to stand up in public, to confront the evils that are manifested by people who still support that ugly little man in Washington. I sincerely hope. Let's talk to Roy now, calling from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
I say thank God for Bill Clinton.
Darn right.
That was the most magnificent thing that could happen, and it couldn't have happened at a better time.
And you know what happened last night? The words that that Keith Olbermann spoke could not have happened without what Bill Clinton did.
That's right. But I'm going to tell you what. Keith Olbermann went into a class of his own last night.
Yes, he did.
But those Republicans, they are pissing down both legs about the Clinton.
And have been since 1991.
And Hillary today getting up and saying what she did about what her husband would have done if he would have got that document in August before 9/11. That was just icing on the cake.
Well, I tend to believe her.
I know she's right.
We know from the way that he ran his White House that Bill Clinton operated on something like 4 hours of sleep a night.
Mm-hmm.
That he read everything that came across his desk. You know, we have forgotten what it is, Roy, to have a committed leader in office.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Clinton would have seen Osama determined to strike inside U.S. and mobilize the entire government. to make it not happen.
Well,
you know, frankly, Al Gore would have been the same way had he been allowed to take the office to which he was elected.
Yeah, well, it was stolen from Al Gore, and he just didn't get to do it. But you're right. Al Gore wouldn't have sat there on that document.
Now, I have no problem whatsoever, Roy, saying that had Al Gore been allowed to take his rightful office, we would still be talking about September 11th only in terms of the fact that it's the day after the 10th and before the 12th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe you're right. But what Bill Clinton, the way he done that and doing it on Fox News, my God, I don't know how in the world it could get any better.
Well, you know the kind of raising I got, Roy. I watched all that and was immediately reminded of the 23rd Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies.
Yeah.
By God, Bill Clinton sat down to that table and had a cup of coffee, didn't he?
Yeah.
I was proud of
him. I've always been proud of Bill, and I've got a bumper sticker. I miss Bill, and it's just he's without a doubt. At some point in time, he will be mentioned along with whatever they described as the greatest president. I know in my lifetime he's the best president, but I think he will. In history, it will show him as one of the greatest presidents, if not the best.
I think you're. Since FDR, yeah, he has to be in the among the best.
Yeah.
Since 1900, he has to be among the best.
Yeah. But this little smirking dude in Washington right now, he will be rated somewhere below Hitler.
Well, yeah. Keith Olbermann did it last night. He said the worst presidency since James Buchanan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, James Buchanan, in many ways, historians view as being the man who made the Civil War happen.
Yeah. Well, I sat there just almost froze watching Keith Olbermann. And at just a few seconds after he was off, I dialed Rick up and told him, whatever you do tonight, you've got to watch Olbermann's rerun and catch that.
Well, it was right after the show was over, and I sat here and watched it on the computer. The video was up over at Crooks and Liars already. I knew how hot it must be to have already made it up at that site.
Yeah, and then I've got a friend that's a staunch Democrat, and me and him was in the same grade in high school, and Sunday was my birthday, and he called me and said happy birthday, and we must have talked for 2 hours. I mean, we was just bubbling about Bill Clinton and everything like that, and then he called me again today and said, how you like the coverage we're getting now? And I gave him your number, and I told him, I said, he was complaining about the Mark Davises and the Rush Limbaugh and all of these
freaks. Yeah.
And I told him, I said, I've got a 877 number here. Call this Bob Kincaid. And if you get a call from a Tom from Texas, that's going
to
be him.
All right, I'll keep an ear out, and I look forward to it, because that's how well, Agnes will keep an ear out. That's how we're going to grow this, Roy.
Yeah, but he is just like the rest of us. He is fed up with what we've been crammed down us, and it's to the point that it's got to stop. And I think Bill Clinton throwed the brakes on, and they're going to start seeing things go in another direction.
I hope you're right. I want you to be right, Roy.
I hope so.
Well, Roy, you have yourself a good night, all right?
Thank you very much.
Take it easy now.
Goodbye.
Bye. You know, it was Roy that first told me about the recent bust of American hero Willie Nelson. And God love Willie. What a sense of humor that man has. He recently put out a statement about the bust. You know, had a bag of weed and some magic mushrooms on the tour bus in Louisiana. And he put out a statement, and he said, "Thank God I had a bag of weed and not a bag of spinach. If it had been spinach, I'd have been dead by now." You go, Willie. Tell you what, let's take a break. And when we come back, well, we got workers in independent news and such, and a little ditty for you to listen to, courtesy of YouTube and being turned on to it by our good friend CB. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sitting here in Iraq, and I wish my head had eyeballs in the back. It's a bummer that my Hummer is an armor to a T. Show me your support. You spent $1.93. Oh, stick magnetic ribbons on your SUV.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. New York City restaurant workers who say they're owed millions of dollars in back wages and tips by the Fireman Hospitality Group took their fight to opera fans on Monday night. Jesse Russell has more on the story.
Restaurant workers in New York City rallied on Monday evening against what they call the exploitive restaurant owner Shelley Fireman. Nearly 200 workers and their supporters stood in front of the Lincoln Center as patrons arrived for the opening night of opera season. They were marching in front of the restaurants Red Eye Grill, Trattoria Del Arte, and Cafe Fiorello. Jose Roque is a worker at one of the restaurants.
They don't want to let you move up. They don't want to give you raises. They don't want to pay overtime. They don't usually pay vacation time. So it's a lot of things. And They don't hire white bus boys, only Latino bus boys and Bengali, because they say they work harder. So that tells you a lot of things.
Roque added that he often had his tips stolen.
They made servers share the tips with the managers, which is illegal.
Dr. Peggy Wireman's Alice in Bushland, Fact and Fantasy in the Bush Administration, begins with Alice falling through a deep hole until she grabs a hanging chad and swings into Bushland. Many a labor activist has felt a bit like Alice in Bushland as King Bush puts the verdicts before the trials in labor cases. Dr. Wireman says her book uses satire and fantasy, but it's carefully fact-checked and full of real information about King Bush, March Hare Cheney, Mad Hatter Rumsfeld, and the total power Dr. Wireman says thereafter.
It's not just about Bush. It's also about his Republican Congress, which has been rubber-stamping what he does, really interfering with the normal congressional processes of give and take and debate, and will back him up in his bid for what is basically unlimited power.
The AFL-CIO and the National Textile Association have jointly filed the first worker rights case under the U.S.-Jordan Free Trade Agreement. It's the first time that a business association has joined with a labor federation in a formal trade agreement workers' rights case. The complaint accuses the Jordanian government of failing to enact and enforce labor laws that meet international standards for protection of worker rights. Now, here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
Healthcare costs continue to rise, outpacing workers' wage gains and inflation. A new survey released on Tuesday by the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust found health insurance premiums climbing on average 7.7% in 2006. While that is a slight decline in the growth rate, premiums for family coverage have shot up 87% since 2000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Maybe it lacks a little something absent the video. That's one of the curses of radio, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe we'll get so maybe we'll get so high tech someday that we can play videos in online too at the same time we're talking about them. You know that could be done. You couldn't do that with over the air radio, but by God, you could do it here. Oh dear, I've got a new idea in my head. So, we'll all be miserable soon. I kid. That was George Michael. He's got his he's got a return tour out going, and the big deal of the concert was when a giant inflatable Bush balloon grew up out of the stage, and then George Michael at a distance pulls the fly off the George balloon, and an English bulldog wearing a Union Jack emerges from the fly attached to a, well, you get the idea. You know who the, and so the name of the song is Shoot the Dog. Don't want nobody to get shot. I'm sure George Michael doesn't either. But, yeah, you get the idea. An email, quick email from our good buddy David in Tennessee. So as for what's happening to vets, the die was cast for them just like it is for the unborn. Once the vet comes home or the baby is born, they don't choose to care about either. You're on your own in a free market economy. Congratulations. God bless America. And that business about New York City and New York State wanting $200,000, I'm betting at least a couple, David says, a couple hundred cops and firemen that dug the bodies and bits out of the rubble had to leave family, go to Iraq, and come home to that screwing. Compassionate conservatism at its very finest. Iran, the hit's just around the corner, David says. With W's numbers sinking this quickly, he must get on with it, or the bounce from even that rally round effort won't save him. Bill Clinton once again knew when to throw a haymaker. Bet it isn't his last. You know, there's a dynamic at work in the Clinton thing that I don't fully understand. Maybe you do. Because for the last couple of years, Bill has been making real live, honest-to-God kissy face with the Bush family, evil as they are. Maybe he's finally figured out that it does you no good to try to reach out to those people. Of course, that's another one of those things that I've been saying for a while. You know, there's no dialogue with the right. Not this right wing. No. They don't want dialogue. They want to slit your throat. Their America would be a happier place if you and me would just have the common courtesy to drop dead. That's what they want. They want Bill Clinton to drop dead. They don't want Hillary to drop dead yet. They want, you know, they need Hillary until 2008 so that they can make sure that they've got all their weirdos mobilized, because she's the only one who can mobilize the weirdos for the Republican Party. That, you know, that's why Fox and Rupert Murdoch and the Republican National Committee and, you know, various and sundry right wingers. Jesus, how many years does Rush Limbaugh get to predict that Hillary is going to run for president before we tell him to shut up? But if she ever does run, he'll be, see, I told you in the year 2000 that she... Hillary is necessary to their plans. And I don't mean a slur on Mrs. Clinton in saying that. But for once in his filthy, stinking life, Jerry Falwell told the truth. The weird little snake-handling, cyanide-sipping, floor rolling, hand laying, tongue speaking, the fake, phony followers of the religion industry will move heaven and earth to stop a Clinton presidency. And that is why they need her so badly. Because you see, the lights are going on for the weirdos of the religion industry, at least a little bit. There are those who know about the congressional testimony of Michael Scanlon, a bosom buddy of Jack Abramoff, who referred to them as religious wackos. They know. Of course they know. And they know that the House has been in Republican hands since 1994. And they know that the House or the Senate has largely been in Republican hands. They know that they have the Supreme Court of the United States of America. They proved that with the 2000 Bush v. Gore decision, because it was decided along straight party lines, Sunshine. They know they've got all these things. They've got most of the governors in the nation. They've got the state legislatures. They've got dog catchers, county surveyors, commissioners, aldermen, ward healers. The religious right has its absolute fondest wishes all come true. And the one thing they care most about, or proclaim that they care most about, the one thing is the one thing that they cannot get. What is that one thing? A ban on abortion. It's not going to happen. It hasn't happened. It won't happen in the future, because the minute that the abortion issue goes away, so does the religious right. So, you know, take heed. Let's go to the phones. Wayne joins us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you, man.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Good, good. I'm glad what you're talking about here. You know, I called the other night, or I don't know if I told you, or I told you privately or whatever, but how upset I am that the religious community hasn't got enraged over this torture thing. You remember me?
Yeah, yeah. They worship a guy who was tortured, but don't think enough about of him to not want it to happen to anybody else. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, okay. Well, and that's exactly what it is. So I started something tonight. Do you remember when, who's the gambler guy that made the statement about if you aborted all the blacks, the crime would...
Bingo Billy Bennett.
Yeah, there you go. Right, I had a meeting with all these church leaders in Beckley. You know, they have some organization.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, there must have been 12 people there or more from all these different donations. And, you know, I told them what the guy said on the radio and that a local guy, you know, agreed with him. And do you want to do anything? And they don't want to do it, you know. But anyway, I start calling them again tonight. All these people, and telling them exactly what I said. And these are religious leaders.
Yeah.
And I think that they should be...
called to account?
Yes, that's exactly. And,
well,
and I'm going to call them all and see if they... I mean, October 5th is kind of pretty close, but we could get a bus and take people up. There's an event in Morgantown.
Yeah, there's one in Pittsburgh.
There's one in Pittsburgh. So, and I was talking to a pastor who is the head of this organization, and I told him my concerns. And I said, I'm outraged that you people aren't outraged. Well, we're letting our international organizations, they've all made statements.
Well, okay, as long as they've made statements.
Yeah. You know, and I said, well, let me ask you this. How many people do you, how many people in your denomination or whatever you call it, throughout the United States? He said, 750,000. I said, well, three-quarters of a million here, three-quarters of a million here. Religious people are making a statement, not their international organizations.
Well, that's just a convenient cop-out. You know,
That's exactly right.
We don't have to stand up and be counted. We've been counted because the boss stood up.
Right. Well, I encourage people, whoever is listening, in your community, there are similar organizations. Let's confront these people. You're so religious. How can you possibly not be outraged by this? You know, godly people, the president's a godly man. That's why you all keep voting for him. Well, this don't seem too godly to me. And I encourage people in their local communities to contact their religious leaders and put the question to them.
Why are you not actively involved in the fight against torture?
Exactly. Do you accept this? Is this okay? And if that's, if that's the case, how can you possibly call yourself a Christian?
Well, there are Bible verses out there that support a lot of what you're talking about, Wayne. You know, when he looks up and he says,
well,
I wouldn't know
about that.
If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. So that means that every time we have tortured any human being, and these religious leaders need to understand this, Wayne, every time we have tortured any human being on the face of this earth, we have tortured Jesus. It's out of his own mouth. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me.
Well, call me crazy, but I don't think that's right, Bob.
No, I don't think so either. You know, there's a reason that the golden rule is in there. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And, it's manifested in Buddhist writing and Hindu writing and Muslim writing and every great religious tradition in this country, and small religious traditions too. Sooner or later, they get around to figuring out that if you don't want it done to you, don't do it to somebody else. And
well,
see,
I told you that's a religion I adopted after looking at all those other religions.
Right, and you got to understand that Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions is the international embodiment of that principle.
Do unto others.
As you would have them do unto you.
Yes.
In other, because, you know, the Common Article 3 says, you know, we're not going to do A, B, C, D, E. Because tacit in that is a recognition that if we do ABCDE, then ABCDE is going to be done to ours.
That's exactly right.
So, exactly. You know, these people who, but it's scary to see what's being contemplated in the halls of Congress. You know, they've said, well, you know, we're going to say very plainly to the world that torture is illegal.
But we're allowed to do it.
No, we're going to say that torture is illegal, but then we're going to define what torture isn't. And what torture isn't is anything George Bush wants to do. You know, we can say we don't torture, and then George Bush can say, but, however, we will take a board up and drive nails through a guy's hands until he talks. But but I have made a presidential finding of fact that that is not torture. And all of this is a means of trying to get around the 1996 Federal War Crimes Act.
Well, exactly, to save their butt.
Right.
I think there's, you know, Bill Clinton has truly started something. You know, I watched Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Al Franken on Hardball.
Oh, God.
You got to watch it, man.
Is it good? I mean.
Oh, it's real good. It's real good. I mean, he, you know. Well, he did like Clinton did. Who's that fat guy from the Chicago Times?
Oh.
Who is that?
You lost me.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He tore him up.
Good.
Tore him up, man. You got to, I'm sure it'll be on Crooks and Liars.
Well, I hope it is, because I want to see. But, you know, I think it's so funny that it's finally happening now, when, in fact, there are people who have been called everything in the book for saying these things for 6 long years.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what, man. You gotta put a lot of this. Well, he didn't get the name Slick Willie for nothing.
Yeah, see, yeah, careful there. Careful.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you know, I liked what Hillary said. You know, if my husband had seen something that said Osama determined to strike inside U.S., he'd have had a fit. If he was on vacation, he would have come back from vacation.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, well, I'm telling you.
Well, there's some stuff that comes with the turf of being president, Wayne, that, you know, when you see it, even if you're on vacation in Crawford, you have to get up and say, all right, pack the bags. We're going back to the swamp.
You mean like responsibility?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're paying you the big-time presidential dollars for something.
Right. Look at a fancy plane they gave you.
Yeah. Boy, that's a nice ride.
Got some nice cars.
Big old bulletproof Cadillac. Who
right.
wouldn't want to ride around in that? You know, never mind the jet. Let's drive back to Washington.
There you go. So, anyway, those are I'm encouraging people to get a hold of their religious leaders in their communities. Everyone has one of these organizations that all these denominations belong to. Go to their meetings and ask them what
yeah.
they're going to do.
You know,
tell them to rent some buses and go to Morgantown. Or if you're closer to Pittsburgh, go to Pittsburgh.
Go to Charlotte. There's going to be one of these in every American city on October 5th, just about.
Well, let's get people going.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Let's demand some accountability for a change.
There you go.
You know, the other, let's start confronting the people that we've been afraid to confront, too. I mean, I'm talking about Southern Baptists. I'm talking about the people that waved the sword in the air, hollering they wanted war. It's time to call these people to account. You know, I want to know, is the official position of the Southern Baptist Church one that condones torture?
Yeah. It is. There you go. I mean, that's an easy enough question to answer, isn't it? Isn't
yeah.
that one of them yes or noers?
Yeah, it is, yeah. But you're not going to get one of those answers.
Yeah, no, you're not, which means no.
No, you're going to get, if we read in the scripture, we'll find out that Peter owned a sword, and therefore.
All right, neat, yeah. Well.
Yeah, Peter played marbles in the dust. Who
I
cares?
I think all these people, and, you know, even, too, going canvassing and stuff, you know, we have you know, list of registered voters and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, the Democrats are pointing out, stop at the Republicans' door and talk to them, too.
Yeah.
Ask them. You condone torture, you know, because that's what the guy your party is supporting is. So.
Yeah.
I think that, I think Mr. Bill started something here, and I think it's about damn time.
But, it is. So. It is. And, yeah, David from Tennessee just wrote back in to ask, he said, so Al Franken has been emboldened?
Yes, he has.
Hey, Wayne, thanks so much, man.
Okay, brother.
Talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye now. As Wayne has informed us in the past, emboldened is an old Serbian word that means to give balls to. Yes. This is the internet. I can say that. Bite me, FCC. It's time for the news. Yeah. We'll be back. Jump right in. We're having fun. 877-443-2366. And this is the Head On Radio Network. You know that. You know me. I'm Bob.
Quality News Network. A newly declassified national intelligence report says the war in Iraq concludes that there are now more extremists than ever and the reach is expanding. President Bush ordered the report declassified after parts of it were leaked to the media over the weekend, a move Mr. Bush says was made for political purposes. In Washington, an official with the Commerce Department blocked the release of a report that implied global warming is contributing to the frequency and intensity of hurricanes. Today's edition of the journal Nature reports that the official ordered that the report not be released as scheduled in May. On Capitol Hill, Congress is not expected to pass a bill on the warrantless wiretap program before the House and Senate break for the November midterm elections on Friday. That's because there are too many differences between the two versions of the bill to be reconciled in such a short amount of time. Also on Capitol Hill, debate continues on a bill related to the treatment and trials of terrorism suspects. Under changes made by Republicans, an enemy combatant would be defined as anyone who's actually involved in terrorist activities, as well as those who provide funding, weapons, and other support, or fight a U.S. ally. In New York today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice defended President Bush's pursuit of Osama bin Laden. She also accused former President Clinton of not leaving a comprehensive plan to fight al-Qaeda when he left office. Rice is also calling on other nations to follow the United States' lead in sanctioning Syria, which it accuses of helping the insurgency in Iraq. A Syrian official later said the U.S. war on terror has failed and that U.S. policies have only worsened international tensions. In California, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has signed a bill that ends state investments in companies that do business in Sudan. The move is designed to pressure Sudan to stop the genocide in Darfur. In Baghdad today, Saddam Hussein was once again thrown out of court for disrupting his genocide trial. The judge also removed his 6 co-defendants. Trial was adjourned and will resume on October the 9th. In Manchester today, Prime Minister Tony Blair gave his last Labour Party address before he resigns. Although it can be hard, he said, it's important to remain close to Washington in the fight against terrorism. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News, up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Scientists are asking scuba divers and underwater researchers to keep an eye out for any damaged coral in the U.S. Caribbean territories. They say the water temperature has risen to 85.5 degrees and the coral will suffer if it doesn't cool down within a few weeks. Former Enron CFO Andrew Fastow sentenced today to 6 years in prison and 2 years of supervised release. He wept as he apologized to Enron's employees, its investors, and his family. Former WorldCom chief Bernard Ebbers began a 25-year federal prison sentence today. The 65-year-old was charged for his role in the accounting fraud that brought down the company. The board of directors for Sharper Image has removed its chairman and CEO. That follows years of sluggish sales. Northwest Airlines and the Flight Attendants Union have been ordered to resume negotiations tomorrow. Union had hoped to be released from negotiations so they could begin unannounced strikes. The Kaiser Family Foundation reports that health insurance premium costs are rising at twice the rate of inflation. The conference board says that in August, consumer confidence rose higher than analysts had expected. Light Sweet Crude settled at $61.01 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ending at its second best close ever, up 93.5 points at 11,669. NASDAQ up 12, S&P 500 up 10. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hey, all right. 5.5 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. You know that. You just heard the opener. You want something that'll bring, tears to your eyes? This is pretty amazing stuff. My young son, our young son, sorry, dear.
It's okay. I'll let you.
He's only entirely mine when he's bad.
No.
Our young son, our fifth grader, our 10-year-old, heard me talking about the Constitution of the United States. And he ran to his book bag. And he ran back in here. And he handed me his Constitution book that he had made. On the front, you know, there's a scroll-looking thing, and it says, the U.S. Constitution, we the people, and there's his name. He's drawn a flagpole on it in crayon with a waving American flag. There are rockets, fireworks, going off around the top of the Constitution. The Statue of Liberty is drawn as only a 10-year-old can draw it. And in his little left-handed hand, he has filled in the answer to the questions. When was the U.S. Constitution written? 1787. In what city was the Constitutional Convention held? Philadelphia. What is the introduction to the Constitution called? The preamble. What are the three branches of the U.S. government, legislative, executive, judicial? What are the first ten amendments to the Constitution called? The Bill of Rights. And hopefully that will be enough of a start for my young son to learn what those rights are and what the function is of the legislative, the executive, and the judicial branches. Why there's a preamble. Why it was necessary to have a constitutional convention in 1787. And if I ever needed for one instant a reason for why I do what I do, My young son just handed it to me, beaming with pride. If opposing these monsters isn't something you can do for yourself, my God, you can do it for your kids, and you can do it for your grandkids, so that when they learn the preamble, it will be from a living document and not from something we talk about from our hoary past. I'm a little choked up. He was proud. And I want to make him prouder still. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend David calls from somewhere near Nash Vegas. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
What a glorious, sweet moment of a child showing us all, teaching us all, letting us all remember what really, really matters.
And a little child shall lead them, you know.
Sounds pretty biblical to me, just like the should you do unto the least of these. That was always, somehow the little old blue-haired ladies always did that when they were talking about doing good. It always was couched in, you know, if you give a nickel to the bum, you're giving it to Jesus. If you do this little good thing, that nobody's ever, not enough people are reminding the rest of the church industry, the religion industry, that it works two ways. You know, you're torturing that goat farmer in Afghanistan. You're torturing Jesus. Closer than any.
He laid it out pretty plainly.
Exactly. We're a hell of a lot closer than those guys at Rod Parsley's 7,000-seater in someplace Ohio, making sure that he can buy the second jet and the second helicopter and the second effort to corrupt that Constitution you've just been talking about. I don't think they're not making that connection of your brown-skinned carpenter and the fact that we're torturing him right now, right this minute, somewhere.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, I want a direct confrontation with organizations like the Southern Baptist Church, and I want to know. I want a formal statement from that guy that lives down there in a McMansion somewhere near you.
Oh, the Dick Man.
Yeah, Dick Land.
Land.
Yeah.
Dick Land. Yeah. Yeah, the mayor of, the guy that mows the yard at Dick. No, that's another little brown fellow that mows the yard at Dick Land. Never mind.
Yeah. You're working it, aren't you?
I'm trying.
You are.
I want to do a funny later, and I got to kind of flip it over after that incredibly wonderful item that your son brought you.
But you know, he said, I want to hear him say we approve of torture, because then once and for all we can have done.
Through torture, God's purposes and George Bush's agenda on Earth can be achieved. The plate will be passing from the left to the right in the aisle you're standing in. Do the right thing. I want one of them on a Sunday morning about 10:45 to say that.
Well, you know, I'm looking here. I'm in Matthew 25, David.
Whoa, it's getting serious now.
And he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. Then he will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, Abu Ghraib, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, Kandahar, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it unto one of these least of my brethren, not my children, not my people, my brethren, you did it to me. But here's the good part. Or here's the, I mean, here's the part where no questions left, because he goes on and he says, then he will also say to those on the left hand, you remember the goats?
Oh, yeah.
Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you? Blah, blah, blah. And he will answer them, saying, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment. You know, if I was if I was the God-fearing man that George Bush claims to be, I'd be a little shook right now, David.
I really think he is. I think he sees the end of his little calculation. I think he sees the end of the little script.
This is one of those guys that when his natural life has run its course and he's laying there 95 years old or whatever, half out of whatever passes for his wits, he is one of those people who will hear bats flapping around his head and he will go to his long home screaming, David.
If Lee Atwater knew enough to apologize and recant, I think W will do a lot more than that. Even though right now prior to the last 2 to 6 weeks, he's exhibited enough denial to have the pulse rate of a happy, all right, this is going to be a colorful phrase, tell Agnes she doesn't have to hit the button.
It's okay. We are button free.
Here he is with a heart rate of an athletic, frequently laid man that couldn't want more, but I think as awareness is beginning to break through that shell and break through those people around him, he goes to Crawford. He gets on an airplane. He gets off the airplane, and he scurries into the Oval Office. He occasionally leaves the Oval Office, gets back on the airplane, goes to where 300 handpicked people who would, well, do a lot of strange things to make sure he felt good about himself. He has never, ever dealt with reality, ever, ever in his life. And he's been more sequestered, more protected, more delusional denial has been fed to him, and he's swallowed it all. But I really believe there are a few cracks in that right now.
Well, I know there are, because at today's press conference, when he was hanging out with Hamid Karzai, you know, the once and future and soon to be ex prime minister of Afghanistan.
Oh, that great example of democracy he was so dadgum proud of.
Yeah, where they're bumping off the women's rights advocates as quick as they can reload. Yeah, that Afghanistan.
Yeah, the guy that caused his troops to leave the area that was most troublesome to probably most of the rest of the world, but they didn't want to be bothered. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he gets a question about this national intelligence estimate after he's, oh, I'm going to declassify it. Now, he does this with the petulance of a school child, David. And I'm going to declassify it. And one reporter asks him about it. And he says, you read it for yourself. Stop all this speculation.
Go ahead.
No, you read it for yourself. Stop all this speculation. Sitting there lecturing a reporter who probably has an IQ about 300 points higher than his. You stop this speculation. Stop it.
And the key phrases have been leaked, and they're going to release, what did I hear, 6 pages out of 30?
Yeah.
You reckon those will be supportive pages, noncommittal pages, spendable pages?
I got them.
Yeah, let's not go into them. I feel too good tonight. I want to go on to a giggle, because I'm reminded, dadgummit, you had to talk about George Michael and flag waving bulldogs coming out of the pants.
Yeah, I know.
I got an image for you. There was an election about a year ago in a major European country, and you know, everybody picked their side, and the battle lines are drawn, and there's a certain intelligence and humor and incredible sense of humor that goes along with the European election that just we just don't get a hold of, because first of all, their elections last 30, maybe 40 days.
Right.
And a lot of guys can say a lot of things. You don't have to be, you don't have to put $50 million on the line to be in the debate situation. There was a massive, perfectly painted plaster of Paris, I think, or something like it. There was a massive caricature statue that was on a flatbed truck. And this was on a full, like, 40-footer, probably, based on the size of the people I saw around it. And the major part of this is Uncle Sam on, you know, in the knee-chest position. And his pants are down. Except that Uncle Sam has the face of George Bush turned to one side and smiling. So here's the chest of Uncle Sam with the face of George Bush and the big, tall, striped hat on, and except the pants are down, and there's this big, exaggerated pink keister up in the air. I'm going to give you a hint. Back rub. Out of this big pink keister sticking up in the air is a perfectly done statuette of Angela Merkel.
Oh, my God.
The old East German flag and a U.S. flag coming out of the only place anything can come out of, a big old keister poked up in the air. And I wish I still had that image. I would send it to you. It's on the computer that I had at work that, you know, I left 3 months ago. But I just thought, oh, brother, because every time a few months back when the back rub episode was going down, I could just see that image of Uncle Sam giving birth via.
You know, that would be that's enough to sort of make me afraid. Just thinking about the image, and I haven't actually seen it, is enough to make me afraid to go to sleep tonight.
Well, I laughed for days, and I'm sure if anybody tried to do something like that over here, heck, if you can't wear a T-shirt, can you imagine how quick that would get you arrested?
Oh yeah, and
parade?
Yeah, you'd be seeing the inside, sure.
Whoever was driving the truck.
Probable cause? We don't need no stinking probable cause.
Constitution, it's just a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Government, I'm headed to the bathtub with it under my arm. Oh, yeah, great bunch of guys. Well, we're in that hour where I need to get out of the way and let some other people have some laughs. But, Bob, thank you for sharing what your son already knows about. And I'm sure you reinforced it in a way that he'll never give up the image he ought to hold on to and probably have to fight for as time goes on.
Lord, that's a chilling thought. It's the idea of him being expected to fight for some damn godforsaken Bush that bothers me even more.
If we don't have a really good stand in 06, and if we don't have a great stand in 08, if we're back to the spot where we are right now in January of 09, any listener that has a 15-year-old son, be thinking about how they'll look in camo and khaki and olive drab.
And field gray.
Be thinking about that. And later on, multi-layer polyethylene with a double zipper. Be thinking about that one for a while.
Whew. You just sent a chill down my spine.
Sorry about that.
I need that image. America needs that image, David.
That's what's at stake. All of it.
You know, you won't be there at Dover when they bring the flag-draped cardboard box home. You might be at the airport when you have to go to the air freight terminal and see your kid brought to you on a forklift.
And by that time, they'll probably have the parent paying for the transport of the body home.
Jesus.
If they want $200,000 out of a fireman that spent 2 years in Iraq, potentially after he dug body parts out of ground zero, they'd certainly bill mom and dad to bring the body home. I could just see some 28-year-old graduate, you know, of some incredible right-wing college. Well, of course they'll pay. They're not going to leave the body over there. We can charge them for it. They'll pay it. All right, that's enough hyperbole.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No. No. There are universities training those people even as we speak, David. Patrick Henry University Law School, Liberty University Law School, Regents University Law School. That's what they're turning out, these hateful little religious fascists who think exactly like what you just described. Exactly.
I fear that they could be thinking of it. It's up to us to take away their opportunity.
God, I hope we do. I mean, I hope against hope that Bill Clinton started something. I hope it wasn't a blip. I hope that he started it, and Keith Olbermann got the ball rolling a little bit harder last night, and I hope it's going a little faster today and a little faster tomorrow. You know, because Dear Leader stands up in his press conference and says, they leaked this national intelligence estimate, and it's a campaign season. Huh. How about that? What do you think about that? Why would they do that? It's campaign season. Huh. How about that? You know, it's the classic case of the schoolyard bully. You know, the schoolyard bully will beat the snot out of you until you rise up and you punch him squarely in the face. And then he says it's dirty politics.
Exactly. Just for walking by. And
yeah.
That's the way it's got to start. Just for walking by.
Time to counterpunch.
You got it.
David, take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend David in Nashville, Tennessee. Or somewhere near there. Having talked about this little press conference today, I've actually got some audio of it. And what do you say we give a listen to it? You up for that? Now, this is not the whole thing. This is just a snippet. But I want you to hear... Okay, it's another one of those video moments, because you can't really, and I apologize, you can't really appreciate Dear Leader until you see him doing what he's doing. You would have to, the cocaine jaw grind was in full swing today. And the faces, good God, I've made fewer faces biting into a green persimmon. Okay. And that will just turn your face inside out, for those of you who have never done it. Those of you who have, you know. So it was, I mean, it was some FaceTime today. But you can still hear the nastiness just in his voice. Hit it, Agnes.
Now, you know what's interesting about the NIE? It was an intelligence report done last April.
Uh-huh.
As I understand the conclusions, the evidence...
A verb! We need a verb!
...was stopped being gathered on February, at the end of February.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait, pause, please. Now this isn't some low-level functionary who never saw the final document. Well, maybe it is. But as I understand it, this document, as I understand it, Do you know what he just did to you? Do you know what he just told you? He just told you that he isn't actually more likely to know what is in last Sunday's Parade magazine insert than he is to know what's in this national intelligence estimate that's been banging around the Oval Office and sitting on his desk since April. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Agnes.
And here we are. Coming down a stretch of an election campaign, and it's on the front page of your newspapers. Isn't that interesting? Somebody's taking it upon themselves to leak classified information.
Now, wait,
Agnes. Political.
I need you. Did you hear him gag? Back it up just a hair. Would you please? Okay, now, you're going to, listen, leak classified documents. Check it out.
Classified information for political purposes.
No, need you to back it up a little bit more. We'll get this right. You know, this is why we do this this way. Little more, dear. Little more. There we go.
Somebody's taking it upon themselves to leak classified information for political purposes.
Bone in the throat, George? Pretzel? Have a little pretzel?
I talked to John Negroponte today, the DNI.
Ah, well, okay, as long as
you know,
it's the DNI.
I think it's a bad habit for our government to declassify every time there's a leak, because it means it's going to be hard to get good product out of our analysts. Those of you who have been around here long enough know what I'm talking about.
Why? What is it?
But once again, there's a leak out of our government.
What is it with these Bushes that they have to talk? It's going to be hard to get good product out of our analysts. Why can't you speak English? Why can't you say, oh, I think people won't be able to do their job as well? Well, yeah, right. Exactly, Agnes. You know, how about that? National security is a daggum widget. Okay? But they write like this, they think like this. Now, this is some language from the estimate itself. Don't go anywhere, Agnes. We're coming back.
I'm right
here. We assess that the Iraq Jihad is shaping a new generation of terrorist leaders and operatives. Perceived jihadist success there would inspire more fighters to continue the struggle elsewhere. Bullet point. The Iraq conflict has become the cause célèbre for jihadists, breeding a deep resentment of U.S. involvement in the Muslim world and cultivating supporters for the global jihadist movement. Should jihadists leaving Iraq perceive themselves and be perceived to have failed, we judge fewer fighters will be inspired to carry on the fight. Ain't going to happen that way, of course, because they already perceive themselves as having succeeded, and they have. We assess that the underlying factors fueling the spread of the movement outweigh its vulnerabilities and are likely to do so for the duration of the time frame of this estimate. Did you get that? The underlying factors fueling the spread of the jihadist movement outweigh its vulnerabilities. That means it's getting stronger. It's getting bigger. Four underlying factors are fueling the spread of the jihadist movement. One, entrenched grievances such as corruption, injustice, and fear of Western domination leading to anger, humiliation, and a sense of powerlessness. Two, the Iraq Jihad. Three, the slow pace of real and sustained economic, social, and political reforms in many Muslim-majority nations. And four, pervasive anti-U.S. sentiment among most Muslims, all of which jihadists exploit. See, they missed one on part one, entrenched grievances such as corruption, injustice, and fear of Western domination. Because I think if you get an Iraqi papa off to one side and you say, tell me, you want revenge against the United States. Oh, yes. Do you want it because of corruption, injustice, or fear of Western domination? I want it because they blew my 3-year-old little baby into a million pieces. Now, you call it corruption, you call it injustice, you call it fear of Western domination, you call it what you will, but I will have my revenge because they killed my baby girl. Okay, so it's your baby girl, sir. Well, I mean, is there anything else? How about public corruption of the Saddam Hussein administration? Screw Saddam. I want revenge on the West, and in particular on the United States of America, because they took my nephew to Abu Ghraib and they put a broom handle up his butt. And they took pictures of him and they sicked dogs on him and they hung him from his jail cell and they tortured him. So therefore, I hope at some point in my life, but it's okay. If it's not in my life, I'll tell my son. If my son can't accomplish it, he'll tell his son. His son will tell his son until eventually we get the revenge that we deserve against the United States of America for what they have done since 2003. You see how it works? I'm not telling you I approve of any of this, but it is completely, utterly, and totally a human response, isn't it? Let's hear a little more from Dear Leader.
Government coming right down the stretch in this campaign, you know, to create confusion in the minds of the American people. In my judgment, is why they leaked it, and so we're going to.
It was leaked to create confusion in the minds of the American people. That's right. Confusion in the minds of the American people, because we all remember that if you, you know, dear leader said it, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, said that, you know, if you don't approve of him torturing people, you know, like the aforesaid man's hypothetical nephew or uncle or father or brother, if you don't approve of those people being tortured, you're, what was the phrase he used? Yeah, damn right, morally confused. That's right. All of you in the chat room, all of you listening on Radio Power, all of you listening on the live stream from Head On Radio Network, all of you listening by podcast, listening to the archives at whiterosesociety.org, every last one of you don't approve of torture, you're morally confused.
Words will always retain their power. Words are for the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of truth. And the truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country.
A country that is deemed confused when it objects to its leaders perpetrating hellish torture on other people. Terribly wrong. Incredibly wrong, morally wrong, utterly wrong, totally wrong. Pick your wrong and we're it! You know? Yeah. Back to Dear Leader.
I told the DNI to declassify this document. You can read it for yourself. We'll stop all the speculation, all the politics about somebody saying something about Iraq.
Okay. Pause.
You know, somebody...
Okay, we will read it for ourselves, darn straight, dear leader. And you know what? We're going to read it without our lips moving for those of us reading it silently, unlike you. Concomitant vulnerabilities in the jihadist movement have emerged that, if fully exposed and exploited, could begin to slow the spread of the movement. You'll notice they don't use the word stop the spread of the movement. The only hope they have is to slow it, because the fundamental causes of it are not being addressed. Okay? The jihadists' greatest vulnerability is that their ultimate political solution, an ultra-conservative interpretation of Sharia-based governance spanning the Muslim world, is unpopular with the vast majority of Muslims. In other words, if you leave the Muslims to sort out the Muslims' problems, the Muslims will probably get it right! But we can't do that, can we? How much money do we pay the people who generated this estimate? This is not rocket science. This is basic human nature. What you tell me to do at the point of a gun, I will do as long as the gun is trained on me. And the minute that the gun is gone, I will go in the opposite direction, because if you are so rotten and so hateful and so vile and so violent as to have to accomplish your will at the muzzle of a gun, then I can be pretty well certain that whatever it is you want, you are wrong about. You see? Here's another little gem. So, you know, we're reading it for ourselves, just like Dear Leader told us to do. Countering the spread of the jihadist movement will require coordinated multilateral efforts that go well beyond operations to capture or kill terrorist leaders. That is highfalutin, fancy, inside the beltway, $150,000 a year civil servant speak for ain't no sense in trying to catch Osama. Because every time you catch Osama, there's going to be another Osama. Welcome to the Hydra. That go well beyond operations to, you know, no. And, that, you know, there's this blurb. This, if democratic reform efforts in Muslim-majority nations progress over the next 5 years, it's a hell of a phrase. If democratic reform efforts in Muslim-majority nations progress over the next 5 years, paren, which they ain't gonna, political participation probably would drive a wedge between intransigent extremists and groups willing to use the political process to achieve their local objectives. Nonetheless, attendant reforms and potentially destabilizing transitions will create new opportunities for jihadists to exploit. Shorthand for those of us in the crowd who actually speak English as opposed to bureaucraties is we are screwed. Attendant reforms and potentially destabilizing transitions will create new opportunities. In other words, the crazy people are going to try to take advantage of every unstable situation. So corollary to that would probably be a statement along the lines of, therefore, it is in our best interest not to create unstable situations. But, of course, we did, and we have, and we will. You know, we hear a lot about how many Iranians hate their government. Oh, they just hate it. And you know what? If I were an Iranian, especially if I were one of that, 60 or 70% of the Iranian population that is actually under 25 years old, and I had to deal with some dumbass giving me a cross look for wanting a new pair of blue jeans from the West or wanting to listen to the music I like to hear as opposed to some dude playing a nose flute at the top of a minaret. I'm sorry, that was highly insensitive. I apologize. Or who wanted to take me out and have me beaten because I wanted to talk to the girl across the street without, the entire damn neighborhood watching. I'm sure that Iran is absolutely chock-a-block full of people like that. And when the first bomb falls, and the first snide little supercilious self-righteous comments are made, as they have already been, we drive those people who otherwise might grow up and take, patience, it's virtue, remember, who might otherwise grow up and change their government, we're going to drive them into the arms of the government as it currently exists, and they're going to be standing there burning American flags and Uncle Sam and the same old crap that we've seen time after time after time, because we well remember how the United States propped up the Shah and the Savik, the most brutal secret police on the face of the planet, torturers extraordinaire. We propped them all up in favor in preference over a guy that they actually went to the polls and did democracy and elected, a guy named Mossadegh. We propped up a thug in the form of Reza Pahlavi, whose son, by the way, now hobnobs with the likes of Rick Santorum. No duh. Really. Because you got to remember, the Shah had kids. And the Shah's kids think it's their right to go and crap all over the people of Iran because that's their country, by God. And if we get rid of Muslim revolution for them, well, you can bet your left hind foot that some Republican administration will be there saying, well, we need to reinstall the Shah. That's the legitimate government of Iran. Wow. See how rotten, sick, and convoluted this all gets? If democratic reform efforts in Muslim-majority nations progress over the next 5 years, which they won't, political participation probably would drive a wedge between intransigent extremists and groups willing to use the political process to achieve their local objective. Nonetheless, attendant reforms and potentially destabilizing transitions will create new opportunities for jihadists to exploit. That's your own government, highly paid at that, well paid at that, telling George Bush and his the bloodthirsty little cabal that when they start raining bombs on Tehran and Natanz and Bushehr, that factor will create more hatred and more violence and more danger for us here at home. Let's go to the phones for a minute. Now let's talk to Steady. Hey, Steady, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and your knowledge on that spans some time, so it's pretty broad, and I appreciate the take, especially with, our little conversation radio. I just wanted to give everyone a little heads up on my first day. I probably got about 5-6 hours of gathering signatures today. I got 13, but I got some interesting signatures. One of them was from the election office, and Louise Felder, who's running for the community college district, she signed my nomination papers. And because of the write-in campaign, I'm going to check that name right. Yeah. Louise Felder, community college district number 5 in the county. I got people to sign my papers who wanted to before, but because I was running for partisan nomination, they had to be a Democrat. But now I can have Republicans sign my write-in papers, which is really kind of a neat dynamic. And although they didn't get the traffic in front of the post office today, I did go back to some of the Union Hall, the IBEW 952.
Yeah.
I went by my friend at CDIS Computer Software, and he's in Texas. So, and I had some good friends whose house I'm at right now, Lars Land in Ventura, standing by one of his many fish ponds. Enjoying the day's work, calling in head on, and just saying, hi, friends. Hi, everybody in the chat room, and I love you. I'm on this.
Sounds like a beautiful day, man.
It's been productive, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow when I go back to I went to the college campus, too, and distributed policy statements to all the various clubs and the associated student body. And so I'm going to follow that up and maybe get some old professors to sign my papers, and it's going to be a lot easier because independent and Republicans can sign too, so I'm in this, Bob. It's like,
yeah, you are kind
of more than 25% of my signatures today for the minimum, and 60 is required maximum.
How much time do you have?
October 23rd.
Oh hell, you'll have 10 times the required number of signatures.
I intend to stay in Ventura up here until I file them, and just to make one final note here on my campaign: as soon as I have my papers filed and I take my oath for office, I'm going to have my long, long hair cut and donate to cancer patients. God bless them.
Yeah, and God bless you, Steady.
Thank you, Bob.
Take it easy.
Agnes and Bruce and John and Bruce at White Rose and
Ben.
Born happen.
Well, I tell you what, we'll be listening in. We'll be sending lots of positive thoughts your way, man.
Thanks a million.
All right, take it easy, Steady.
Okay.
Later.
Bye.
Our good friend Steady, Michael Stettler, the hardest working man at Camp Democracy, by the way, I might add. Let's, in the little bit of time remaining, let's finish off with Dear Leader's admonition to us to go and read the National Intelligence Estimate, all 6 pages that they were going to release. Not that they were going to let us read, you know, pages, you know, 7 through 30, mind you. Let's go back to Dear Leader.
By trying to confuse the American people about the nature of this enemy. And so John Negroponte, the DNI, is going to declassify the document as quickly as possible. He'll declassify the key judgments for you to read yourself. And he'll do so in such a way that we'll be able to protect sources and methods of that our intelligence community uses. And then everybody can draw their own conclusions about what the report says.
Now, are you confused? I'm not confused. I have utterly no confusion. I wasn't confused when shock and awe went down in March of 2003. I have not been confused since. See, I can look at the map and I can go, oh, look, that's Iraq. Oh, look, that's Afghanistan. Oh, look, that is Saudi Arabia, where the people on the planes came from. Okay, I've gotten really, really good at it. And I can look over and go, nope, that's not Iraq, that's Iran, that's an N, not a Q. Who is it that's telling Dear Leader that the American people are confused? Who's doing that?
I know why you did it. I know you were afraid. Who wouldn't be? War, terror, disease. There were a myriad of problems which conspired to corrupt your reason and rob you of your common sense. Fear got the best of you. He promised you order, he promised you peace, and all he demanded in return was your silent, obedient consent.
Is that what it was? Are we operating from a script here? Is the confusion that Dear Leader is talking about, does it arise out of what he expected to be there? That confusion arises from fear, and that they have done everything they can to make us live in a perpetual state of fear? Is that it? Or is it just that when you disagree with Dear Leader, you are by definition confused? Because that's pretty damn scary when you get right down to it, because that means that you're eligible for a trip to the, you know, state psychiatric hospital, because, you know, you remember the Soviet Union, right? You remember how in the Soviet Union, if they stood up and said, you know, this is kind of nasty, this little dictatorship that we're living in, and we sure would like to be free to go where we want to do and say what we want to do and think what we want to think. And you know what, you know what would happen? A guy in a dark suit with a little wire running up the back of his ear going into the side of his head would show up, and he would tell you that you were confused and that you needed mental treatment and to come along nicely, and we've got some lovely medications for you, and we will end your confusion, and you won't need to speak up about your government anymore. We'll make it feel ever so much better. That happened. My God, that happened. Alexander Solzhenitsyn documented it, that sort of thing happened. But now we don't need to document it happening to the Soviets. We're watching it happen to us. And I don't know if Osama is dead or alive, but I know that if he died smiling. Because if he hated the United States as much as we are told that he did, he died knowing that he had gone a long way toward achieving his goals, and that it never could have happened without George W. Bush. You know, Bill Clinton actually did make an effort to kill him, and he didn't try to terrorize the nation over it. Bill Clinton tried to kill Osama bin Laden, wanted to kill Osama bin Laden, and on the floor of the Senate, one Republican freak from Minnesota screamed, "Wag the dog!" Trent Lott agreed. You heard the Olbermann thing last night. You know it as well as I do. You remember the Kosovo campaign, right or wrong? Wrong. It was wrong. But you remember the Kosovo campaign, and you remember Trent Lott standing up on the floor of the Senate saying, "I can support the troops without supporting this president." You remember that. Efforts were made. Responses were calculated. The work was done. And all along the way, a group of anti-American, fascist, bloodthirsty monsters kept trying to make us less safe. An email comes in from our friend Cliff in Eugene, Oregon. "Don't be amazed why these people are voting against their interests, these religious fundamentalists. The Republican money machine has stopped by and told the pastor of all those churches, 'How would you like to have $100,000 or so for your poor church? All you have to do is tell your congregation to vote for us,' and bingo, they're voted in again. These people are mostly uneducated and will do what their pastor tells them to do, whatever it is. Pathetic, I know, but we will never get through to them until we get to the pastor himself. That is the key, and unfortunately, I don't think the leadership of the Democratic Party cares or cannot go dollar for dollar with the Republican machine, and that's the way it is." But you see, the thing that it is possible, I think, Cliff, and you know, it requires creativity, and it requires a good bit of skull sweat to figure out how to go about it. But it is possible, perhaps, to draw these people out into a circumstance where you've got them in the eye of the media, and you ask them point blank with the cameras rolling, "Who would Jesus torture? Who would Jesus waterboard? Who would Jesus soak to the bone and put in a freezing cold room? Who would Jesus poke with a stick after 10 minutes of sleep and do it again and again and again for days on end? until a mind just turned to jello. Who would Jesus do these things to? And when we get to the point where we can make these preachers deal with these issues with the lights on and the cameras rolling, then we will have become pretty doggone sharp, and we will begin to have a chance, or so I hope. Well, we have read the National Intelligence Estimate, or at least chunks of it. I'm not cherry picking. I mean, it just kind of ran out of time. I figured, you know, you guys are as competent to read it as I am to read it to you. It's there. And the thing is, there's nothing in it that suggests that we are on our way to anything approaching success. We judge that most jihadist groups will use improvised explosive devices and suicide attacks focused primarily on soft targets who implement their asymmetric warfare strategy. More with the asymmetry. While Iran and, to a lesser extent, Syria remain the most active state sponsors of terrorism, many other states will be unable to prevent territory or resources from being exploited by terrorists. Thousands and hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars to produce this thing, and it boils down to two words. We're screwed if we do it the way George wants to do it. We're screwed. I'm sorry, I just speak plainly. That doesn't make me feel good to know it. But if we let this evil little man have his way, we're screwed. Think about that. Is it worth talking to your neighbors? Is it worth standing up to the right winger at the water cooler? I think I know your answer. I'm pretty sure I do. That's it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for sharing your precious, precious time with us. The show tonight was produced, of course, by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor, the engineer, the chief engineer, the only engineer of the Head On Radio Network, is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Peter Godbold, who was a little bit under the weather, is our IT professional. We're told that he was hit in the head by Al-Qaeda's number two mirror ball at a disco ball. Okay. Be well, Peter. Now see, you broke it. It was a perfectly good one-liner, Agnes, and you busted it. Our good friend Shelby LaPrey is our streaming partner at radiopower.org, and we appreciate all of her efforts. Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs on the Horn. Remember, he's the hardest working man in liberal talk. And he never sends a bill. Big howdy to the moderators at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. You guys do a wonderful, and girls, guys, people, do a wonderful job. Gene is our news editor at the headonradionetwork.com news blog, and we appreciate all of his yeoman-like efforts. All of the programs on the Horn happen because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream, and in so doing, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. The program produced tonight by Catherine Bay, as always, Robin Bittman announces for us. Phone number here is 800-825-5937, or you can email during the program, MikeDMalloy@earthlink.net. So welcome to the people listening through the IE America Radio Network. Also, if you're listening on Sirius Satellite Channel 145, radiopower.org, or if you're listening tomorrow night, whiterosesociety.org. We welcome you all. We patch it together as best we can, right? I wanted to mention, for those of you who have been going to MikeMalloy.com or MikeMalloy.net and just gagging at the fact that it was a Model T site, check it out now. Huh? And while you're there, register for the message board. It's we finally got this thing up and running, actually, a few minutes.